Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome inside ESPN Studios. This is the Spencer Wilson Show. I'm your host, Spencer Wilson. Happy Halloween to everybody out there. If you're getting ready to celebrate, if you've already done a little celebration, or if, like I said, you're getting dressed and ready to go out there and start celebrating, might be a little too early for that, but hey, I never know, you know, if you're out there having your own plans. But either way, happy Halloween. Hope you got some fun planned tonight. Just remember, be safe out there. Bundle up. It should be cold if you're going to be outside trick-or-treating. But hope you have fun tonight. Enjoy the festivities of Halloween. And, man, what an end to the World Series. What an end to the Fall Classic. We'll get into that here very shortly. And we'll also have some news about some NBA happenings going on from last night, a fight, an injury. So we'll talk about that. We'll also take a look at Thursday night football and some news circulating around the NFL right now with some trades and some firings and all that good stuff happening. And then I'm going to give you my two cents worth later on in the show about some comments Tampa Bay Buccaneers head coach Bruce Arians made about referees after some frustrating calls in their game against Tennessee this past week. So I'm going to give you my two cents worth on that later on in the show. But like I said, we're starting with the Fall Classic. The 2019 World Series is in the book, which means the 2019 MLB season is in the book. And what a finish. What a finish to a World Series that saw the road team win all seven games for the first time, not just in Major League Baseball, but in the National Hockey League and the National Basketball Association. Not really something you can explain how teams just can't win in their own ballpark. And the postseason, when you got your crowd behind you, everyone's riled up, waiting for you to win and waiting for you to play well, how these two teams went on the road and just continued to silence home fans and win games on the road. This was an incredibly entertaining World Series with a lot of firsts. Of course, the Nationals' first World Series. It was Gerrit Cole's first World Series. It was Steven Strasburg's first World Series. So to see these young guys step up, to see this team step up in this kind of occasion was a lot of fun and made this feel even more special. And, I mean, what a series. Just looking at each game. Well, I mean, we should start with Game 7 since that just happened. And what an interesting decision it was by A.J. Hinch. When you had a 2-0 lead, right? Bottom of the second inning, Gurriel homers to left. You're up 1-0. Bottom of the fifth, Correa singles to shallow left. Gurriel again comes in to score, makes it 2-0 Houston. So after five innings, you have a 2-0 lead. And I had mentioned it yesterday on the show. I was talking to John Ramey and Coach T.J. Bruce last night before we came on the air for the coaches show about using Gerrit Cole and in the same way that the Giants used Bumgarner in 2014. And I was surprised when Cole wasn't the next guy out of the bullpen behind Greinke. I'm also a little surprised Greinke went into the seventh. Because if it's game seven, and why wouldn't you get your in Gerrit Cole? You have a lead with Greinke after five, really after six, because no one scored in the sixth inning. So heading into the seventh, it's 2-0 Houston. I would figure if you're heading into the final stretch of the World Series, right, and you're heading into the seventh inning with a lead, 2-0, why not bring Gerrit Cole out of the bullpen? There was comments by A.J. Hinch that said he was just going to close the game if we had the lead, so meaning Gerrit Cole was going to come in and just work the ninth inning. Why? Why would you have Gerrit Cole just work the ninth? He wasn't in game six. He had that day rest. He had the travel day rest. This was a guy I feel like could have come out and definitely given you three innings, and you might have been able to avoid the ending of that game had Gerrit Cole been out there. Because if you look at the way that 2014 Game 7 went between San Francisco and Kansas City, it was 2-2 after the second inning, and then it was 3-2 San Francisco after the fourth inning. And heading into the fifth, Bumgarner made his appearance. Bumgarner pitched five innings that night. He pitched the last five innings of the game. So I feel like once you knew you had the lead and you were going into those final three innings, why wouldn't you bring your best pitcher out of the bullpen off a couple days rest and have him pitch the last three innings of the World Series? I mean, I'm no, you know, baseball manager, so I'm not going to sit here and say that I know more than A.J. Hinch by any means. I called Dave Martinez Anthony Martinez on the show last night. Think I felt good after that? I felt like an idiot in front of a room full of people that were there to watch Game 7 of the World Series. So I'm not going to say I know anything more about baseball than A.J. Hinch does, but I was surprised to not see Gerrit Cole in the seventh when you're heading into that inning up 2-0 and you've played relatively well and kept those bats from Washington off the board. I mean, it was 2-0 at that point. You look at how the last three innings went, it was a mess for the Houston bullpen to get through those last three innings. Harris didn't even clock in a third of an inning. He came in, he gave up two hits and an earned run, and then it was pretty much just a mess from that point on. Osuna came in and had an inning and a third, but still gave up two hits and an earned run and two walks on his own. Presley, a third of an inning, was able to kind of, you know, two pitches. That's all it took for him to get in and get out, which is a nice little break for him. But then Smith, a third of an inning, two hits, two earned runs, one walk. Ucritti with two-thirds of innings pitched and one hit. So if you look at what happened to Houston once Greinke left that game, it is just, again, a huge head-scratcher as to why Gerrit Cole wasn't out there those last three innings. Because you get to the seventh, and essentially it all starts to fall apart there with Rendon homering to left to make it 2-1. Then Soto gets on. Kendrick hits a home run to make it 3-2. When Washington grabbed the lead in the seventh inning, it didn't just sound like it was over in Houston the way the crowd moaned and groaned and quieted down. But you could see some of the looks on the Astros' faces from the dugout. Like, oh no, this can't be happening again. We can't be losing a lead again here at home. And then tried to respond in the bottom of the seventh, nothing. Top of the eighth, boom, Soto singles to right, Eaton comes in and scores. Now it's 4-2 Washington. Houston needs a response in the bottom of the eighth inning, and they just can't get it because Houston went from Scherzer to Corbin to Hudson. Your best pitcher in Scherzer to another talented pitcher in Corbin to Daniel Hudson. That's a three-pitcher sequence that makes so much sense for Washington. Because, again, Patrick Corbin, starting pitcher, does really well in this series, in this postseason. You know he's on rest. You know he has success. Washington puts him out there. That to me, would have been the same line of thinking Houston would have had around Gerrit Cole, but didn't. And then Hudson comes out and shuts the door. I mean, Washington used some of their best pitchers, whereas Houston tried to go, I mean, if I had to explain it better, Washington took more of the direct route, where I feel like Houston was trying to take a more scenic route. Like, Houston could have just, I feel like, could have put Cole in there in the seventh and just gone straight to the title instead. They tried to see some trees off to the side. They wanted to go see this old statue over here that has a cool story around it. They wanted to go on this long trip all the way around to try and get to this title, and it just made no sense. Because, I mean, now you're down 4-2 in the bottom of the eighth. You can't respond at all. Eaton then steps up, singles to center, which allows Gomez and Robles to come in and score to make it 6-2 Washington. And granted, that's still technically you're only down four. So bases loaded, grand slam, and all of a sudden you're tied. Sure, in the bottom of the ninth, but did you really think that was going to happen? I once it became 6-2 in the top of the ninth, I essentially felt that it was over. I didn't think Houston was going to come back. I didn't think there was a comeback in them. The way they've kind of struggled to keep their head above water when going down in this series, it just felt like it was over, and it was meant to be the Nationals. And you got to take your hats off to them. Dave Martinez said it best last night, 19-31. They just stayed in the fight. They kept fighting. Now they've won the fight. And how exciting for Washington to win their first World Series that way. It's a bummer they didn't win one of their three games at home, but you still get to send your crowd into a frenzy at Nationals Park. The few thousand that were there watching the game last night, of course, the parade they'll have now will be a memory for everybody, every fan, player, and manager involved with this team. And I also am thrilled that Steven Strasburg got the MVP. I know Ryan Zimmerman was the inaugural pick. He's been there every season. He's stuck with this team, but Strasburg wasn't too far behind him. And the way he was held out of the playoffs in 2012, I believe it was, feels good to see him get out there, get those two games in the World Series, games 2 and 6, I believe, and dominate on the road and really be the selling point of this team as to staying in and fighting, because Strasburg has had his pitch count watched, his inning count watched. I mean, he's been so heavily examined and watched and controlled by this Nationals team. It felt so good to see him get out there and just not necessarily let loose, but felt like he was kind of let off the reins a little bit. He was out there just able to be himself. And it was fun to see that. I was happy to see him win the MVP. I think it was well-deserved. Honestly, I could have seen it gone to any one of these guys. Scherzer, Strasburg, Soto, Kendricks. I mean, there was a handful of guys that could have gotten the MVP last night for this series and what this team has done. But I feel like it was given to the right guy in Steven Strasburg. And I know nothing about baseball this postseason. I was 4-8 in my predictions this postseason, which honestly, even to say I got four things right makes me pretty happy with myself, seeing as how much I struggled. But nonetheless, fun baseball playoffs, fun postseason. And before we close the book on 2019 Major League Baseball, I saw an article yesterday as I was reminiscing about the first six games of the World Series, getting ready for Game 7. I saw an article written about how Nationals and Astros was set to be the least watched World Series in history. And this article didn't necessarily make me mad. It just made me frustrated. Like, really? We have this World Series with so many firsts that's been so entertaining, and now this has to come out? Who cares? Who cares? I mean, I'm sure marketing execs and those guys care, but from a fan's perspective, I don't care if it's the least watched World Series, because I chose to watch it and I had fun watching it. Anyone out there who chose not to missed out on seven entertaining games. Yeah, they weren't the closest games in Major League Baseball history. They weren't the most competitive at times, but you can look back at every game and think of a moment that stands out. And to me, that's what makes these series like this special. Even if the games aren't overly competitive the entire way through, there's stories that continue to unravel, there's players that continue to step up, and there's moments that get created. So I don't care if it's the least watched World Series in history. It doesn't matter to me. This seems like someone, again, just trying to rain on a parade that we're all enjoying. You know what? No one else should really care. Again, marketing execs will. But no other fan should care this is the least watched World Series. Because it provided moments, it provided entertainment, and it was fun for all of us to sit there and watch a team trying to win their second in 3 years with stars, and a team with stars in their first World Series trying to make history. And to see the Nationals do this, it's fun, it's entertaining, and it's a World Series that will forever be remembered, not only because the Nationals won their first World Series, not only because every team won every road game, but because the entertainment that the Fall Classic always gives you, and the fact that this one went seven games and gave us drama to the very end, that's what this is going to be remembered for, because it was a fun and a classic World Series. And I honestly, I know I've complained about the length of the season and the pace of the games, but you just can't beat what the World Series, the feeling around the World Series, because the talk around baseball is always, oh, it rides on every pitch. But this is literally the seven games where it does ride on every single pitch. So I hope that later on, down the line, in the future, more people come back to baseball, and especially for the World Series, because don't ever question the skill that it takes to play this game at this level. Don't ever take the heart, don't ever take the time and effort for granted that these men put in to be at this level. And but like I said, regardless of whether what I say about the pace or the length of the season, I always respect these men for playing this game the way they play it and how they play it. And I feel like every fan should, whether you're a fan of Washington, a fan of Houston, respect the way these teams play this game, respect the way all these teams play this game, and don't try to rain on someone's parade just because, oh, not as many people are tuning in. Who cares? Those of us that did turn in enjoyed this series. Now, honestly, after the World Series, I'm always ready for a little more baseball, so spring training, let's hope it rolls around relatively quickly. But now that the World Series is in the books, the baseball season is in the books, it's time to start focusing more of our attention on football, basketball, and hockey, and some interesting news and happenings around the world of basketball from last night. So we'll take a look at some of that after the break here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Well, some interesting happenings from last night in the NBA. We had a fight and an injury that, the injury is definitely going to change some things. The fight, not so much. The fight actually, the fight was between 76ers star Joel Embiid and Minnesota Timberwolves star Karl-Anthony Towns. If you didn't see the fight, I don't know if it's worth going and watching it. I went and watched it, obviously, just so I knew what it looked like. I didn't see the game live. I was at the coach's show during the time. But very, very WWE-esque in a sense, really. The two guys, just like a lot of NBA stars do now, they somehow got one arm each like tangled, or one of them was sort of kind of holding the other one's arm in. It looked like Karl-Anthony Towns was kind of pinning Embiid's arm into him. Like, you know, how big guys get tangled up under the basket and they all just kind of throw their hands up in the air. Like, you know, oh, what just happened to me? I just got punched in the face. Whatever it is. You know, that big kind of like, whoa, when they lean back with their arms in the air. So big guys just get tangled up in the NBA, and it seemed like Embiid's arm was pinned and Towns was kind of like, you know, he had his hands up with his bicep and his forearm was kind of like pinning Embiid's arm to him. And the two got into his kind of like a wrestling match, and Karl-Anthony Towns kind of threw a punch, kind of didn't. It almost looked like it was he wanted a punch and like halfway through decided he was going to try and throw an elbow. I don't know. It was a very short range punch he threw. So I don't think he ever expected it to land. And then Embiid essentially just tackled him. So there was a supposed eye poke in there from Embiid, which is like such a heel thing to do when someone tries to punch you, like a Ric Flair, just boop, right to the eye and blind the opponent. But anyway, it was kind of your general basketball fight. Nothing really happened. Two guys got into it. Essentially, it's kind of, you know, dramatic chest bumping. They both went to the floor. But this is where it starts to get interesting, because the NBA officials essentially deemed Ben Simmons, quote-unquote, a peacemaker in the fight, where I don't necessarily see it as a peacemaker because he's laying on top of the guy. Towns got to the ground, right? So when Embiid and Towns both go to the ground, 76ers fans and coaches are picking Embiid up and pushing him back over towards the bench. He's pumped. He's high-fiving teammates. He's shadow-boxing on the sidelines. He shadow-boxed again as he was after he was ejected and he was getting led down the tunnel. He was shadow-boxing and pumping his fists to the fans. But then once Carl—so Embiid's on the ground. He gets picked up. He's over by his bench. Karl-Anthony Towns, though, is still on his—laying chest down on the floor. And Ben Simmons is laying on top of him, essentially— I mean, not. It didn't look like he was choking him. Karl-Anthony Towns looked like he was talking, but he essentially kind of had his arm wrapped around Anthony Towns' throat while he was laying on top of him. I don't necessarily see that as peacemaker, whereas maybe you're just the guy not doing as much as the other two in a fight. But don't necessarily see that as peacemaker. But again, nothing too much out of this. The NBA officials that day in the game last night deemed it a fight, so they both got ejected. And now the NBA officiating office will take a look at that and conduct interviews and whatnot, which I believe started this morning with Embiid and Towns possibly facing suspensions. But ultimately, this is just it is what it is, which is an NBA scuffle. Nothing really came of it. It was a lot of just nothing. So it was still interesting. It's still fun to see a basketball fight. But, you know, halfway through the third quarter when the Sixers were up 20, it wasn't a whole lot there. It just seemed more than it was. Both these teams, though, very, very good this season. So we'll see if either one gets suspended. They took to Twitter. I think Embiid said he didn't throw a punch, so he shouldn't get suspended. But I think anytime you get tied up with a guy and take him to the floor, probably, maybe not suspension, but you're probably going to get fined a little bit of money. But either way, it'll be interesting to see how Ben Simmons comes out of this as well with that whole peacemaker talk, which, again, I don't necessarily see it as a peacemaker just as much as he's not being as much of a jerk during the whole situation. But still, nothing too much coming from it. It is just what it is. Another fight in the NBA. I was a little disappointed when the 76ers management said that they don't condone it. You don't have to condone it, but shouldn't we have more of this in sports? If two guys have a problem, let them fight. The benches don't need to clear. Everyone doesn't need to get involved, okay? You're not that special. If two guys are having a fight, let two guys have a fight. And once either one goes down or both goes down, then you jump in and help split everything up. But you know what? There's going to be animosity in sports. Let them duke it out. Nothing wrong with that. You don't have to condone it, but don't act like this is some kind of crime. Just saying. Now we're moving on to some news about past Warriors and current Warriors. I wanted to start with past Warriors because Kevin Durant was on First Take this morning and he was having a really in-depth conversation with the cast, with Stephen A. Smith and Max Kellerman. And he got to this point where they were talking about him and Draymond Green having their disagreement in Golden State last year, which ultimately led to Draymond getting suspended without pay, for a game or two. And Kevin Durant started talking about how that was affecting him and how every day his free agency was affecting him, how everyone was looking at him. Here's a quote from the show this morning from Kevin Durant. He said, quote, "Every day it was about my free agency. Every day was about my disposition as a player. What I looked like on the bench and what I looked like during the games, it opened up a lot of nonsense that could have been avoided." End quote. So, yes, you're put in the spotlight after a disagreement. Anytime there's an internal disagreement, that's always going to be a big talking point. And then you go to kind of how he looks every day as a player, his disposition on the court. Yeah, what did you expect? You were a high-profile all-star leaving OKC and coming to Golden State to join a team that hadn't been touched the year before and had an NBA title in their hands. What did you expect? You don't think you're going to be under the microscope for every little thing? Everything you did was going to be examined to the nth degree. And when there's an internal struggle, that's going to be even more examined because now you two have to somehow reconcile this and work day to day and try to win another championship. Ultimately, they didn't. They fell short to Toronto. And now all of a sudden, KD is gone. And Draymond had talked about in an interview that he had, I think it was closer to the actual occurrence, or maybe it was, I think it was on Woj's podcast. But he said that he had felt kind of betrayed that Golden State had sided with Kevin Durant on that instance, but Draymond was able to get over it and move on because he knows it's going to be examined and you have to try to ignore it and move on. I think KD knew that too, but it sounds like he was so consumed by how other people viewed him when he was on the court. And of course, all those Twitter spats in real life when he was creating the burner accounts and going after fans or whatever or whoever he was going after. It doesn't seem as though KD was ever 100% focused on basketball. Not to say he wasn't given 100% effort. Not to say that at all. But it sounds like his mentality, some of his focus, was a little too preoccupied with how he was being perceived. And once you start to do that, I feel like, especially in a championship team in a big market area like the Bay Area, you're going to start having some self-doubt. And it sounded like it wasn't necessarily self-doubt about himself as a player, but self-doubt about himself as a teammate. How he was being perceived as a teammate. How people were looking at him and how he was treating Steph and Draymond and Coach Kerr and all these things. And it sounds like he may have started to overthink how he acted. And he said that the Draymond was a factor in him leaving. It wasn't the end-all, be-all, but it was definitely a factor, which I can understand. If you have a spat like that with a teammate. Sounds like they were able to get over it relatively well, but we know how that season ended. So maybe there was some underlying tension and frustration that I don't know if it rebubbled up to the surface or what, but it definitely sounds like KD didn't feel like he was necessarily welcome back to Golden State. I don't think they ever would have, traded him away or not re-signed him, obviously, but I don't think that Kevin Durant ever thought that after that scuffle with Draymond Green, he was going to come back to the Warriors regardless of whether they won a championship or not. That sounds like he was on the fence, and that helped him kind of scoot over to that side. And as he was dealing with some of the injuries and some of the other stuff around him, he kind of decided, hey, with our contract, with some guys leaving, I'm just going to go. And you can respect that from an athlete's perspective of wanting to make the best decision for themselves, but it sounds like it wasn't so much a basketball decision as it was a personal perception decision. Because when he left OKC to come to Golden State, there was all that talk around, oh, he's just going there to win a championship. Oh, he just wants to get away from Russ and be a part of this super team now. And I don't know if those talks ever really got away from him as well. I feel like being known as the guy leaving a team just to come and win a championship, I feel like that bothered him too. And that never really went away after he even won a championship and an MVP. It's like, yeah, what? So what? So he did it on the Golden State Warriors. So you have Curry and Thompson and Green, Iguodala, and all these guys around you. So what? So I think there was some personal doubt about how he was being perceived as a teammate. I think there was some doubt about how his teammates felt about him. And ultimately, just not able to get over some of those mental barriers and really move on. So I think that's what he's looking for in Brooklyn. And he's ruled himself out this year. He did that on the show this morning as well. He said that he's definitely not coming back this season. So I think he can take this whole season to kind of recuperate, let the entire world of the NBA, it's not move on, but essentially kind of just get distracted by players playing right now and how the season's going to unfold. And he also did a great job of sticking up for his teammate Kyrie Irving at Brooklyn as well. So it's going to be an exciting year next year when these two guys get on the floor together and play in Brooklyn. And hopefully KD finds some peace in that decision and the entire world of the NBA can move on and enjoy the show that hopefully those two guys are going to put on in Brooklyn for the Nets come the 2020-21 season. But now that KD has moved on from Golden State, a couple other guys have moved on from Golden State as well. Looking at that team this year, we all knew it was going to be rough. We all knew it was going to be a bit of a skid with Curry and Draymond Green out there kind of leading the way. And now they're without Steph Curry. He suffered a broken left hand last night in the game against the Suns, and he is out indefinitely. I believe he's going to get some MRIs and CT scans either today or tomorrow. I'm pretty sure it's today, and of course, they'll see how it goes. But that is a tough blow for a team that's already struggling on really both sides of the ball, offensively and defensively. And, I mean, now it's essentially Draymond Green and the rest of the supporting cast, and it's going to be... I mean, this was already a tough season for Golden State. Coach Kerr had already kind of addressed that hey, this is kind of our reality now after that OKC loss. This is kind of our reality. This is where we are. This is what we're going to have to do. We just got to try and recreate and rebuild right now. And it's going to be even harder without your man, Steph Curry, out there. He went in for a layup. He got knocked off. Forget who the Suns player was that took the charge. Aaron Baines tried to sit there and take a charge. Curry fell down. Baines fell down. Baines just happened to land on his hand. Baines came up to the coaching staff of the Warriors after the game, asked how he was doing. Kerr said you could see that he felt pretty bad. I mean, that's just a basketball play that happens, and guys get injured. It sucks when it happens to guys like Steph Curry, but that just sometimes is what it is. So now if you're the Warriors without Curry, without Thompson, obviously KD gone, you got to focus on what Draymond Green can give you. And I had the Warriors as one of my bottom four playoff teams, that fifth through eighth spot, depending on how long Curry is out for with a team that, like I said, already is struggling. They could very well miss the playoffs now. I thought it was going to be a flip of the coin, really, whether or not they could put a run together and get themselves into that bottom four spot in the West, in the Western Conference playoffs. But with Steph Curry now being out, with his future being so uncertain this season with a broken hand, the good news is it wasn't his shooting hand, right? So if he comes back and they can tape it up and he can get out there with his right, maybe just be smart and sparse with the use of his left hand, he might not have to be out for as long. But still, this is going to be a stretch for the Warriors. It's going to be a tough season for them, even more tougher now without Steph Curry out there. But I will hand it to their general manager, who was asked after the game if they'll think about tanking at all this season or maybe think about changing their approach. And he just said, quote, "I won't even respond to that," and walked out of the room, which is smart. You know what? I respect that for any manager that knows, or GM that knows, it's going to be a tough season, and to choose not to rebuild and stick it out and try to play the best basketball you can play or whatever sport you're playing, to do that, I respect it. And I hope that Curry isn't out for too long, because I'm not a Warriors fan, but I love the guy. I respect the guy. He's one of the great players in the NBA. He's extremely fun to watch. So I hope he gets back out there very, very soon and continues to contribute to an exciting NBA season this season. And coming up after the break, we've arrived at Thursday night again. It's the start of week 9 in the NFL season. We got a fun NFC West matchup coming up tonight. So we'll talk about that after the break here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Alrighty, we roll into week 9 of the NFL season, which starts tonight with Thursday night football between the San Francisco 49ers, the undefeated 49ers, and their NFC West rivals, the Arizona Cardinals, with young Kyler Murray back there at the helm. And before we get into that, let's get into some other news and notes from around the NFL these past couple days. I did see that the Cincinnati Bengals have decided to bench Andy Dalton, and it's about freaking time. I mean, what more do you need? You're 0-8. Did you not think maybe at 0-6 you could maybe switch some things up? I mean, Andy Dalton has been a good quarterback and an okay quarterback. He was better and earlier off in his career when he was getting the Bengals to the playoffs, it seemed like, every year. They were competing in the AFC North. But these last 2-3 seasons have just felt like he has just completely gone off the rails and just hasn't been consistent, hasn't been on target. He seems as though he's struggling to understand the game that's in front of him. And not surprising that Cincinnati finally went, oh, yeah, okay, maybe we should try something else at quarterback here. So rookie quarterback Ryan Finley will start for the Bengals, not this week as Cincinnati is on a bye, but as they come out of their bye week, they'll play the Baltimore Ravens So then Ryan Finley will get a chance to test himself against the division leaders right now in Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. But good to see the Bengals finally showed some sense of mental stability and decided to change at quarterback, decided to make a change at quarterback because it just had – nothing's been working for that team right now. I mean, the Dolphins made some moves going into the season that told you it was going to be rough for them. Cincinnati's 0-8 by hoof or crook just being awful this year and not getting anything going offensively and defensively. So changes needed to start happening for this team, and finally they decided to start making a change at quarterback with Ryan Finley, and we'll see how he does against Baltimore. Some more quarterback news. Joe Flacco is out with a neck injury, although it's reported he won't need surgery for it. Right now, the prediction or the thought is that he'll miss about 4 to 6 weeks. Could be more. He's going to get a couple doctor evaluations, I think, the next coming days or next week or so. But it's projected that he's going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. Could be more, could be less. But he is definitely not going to make the start this week for Denver. And instead, a young man by the name of Brandon Allen will be making his the start. He was picked up off waivers from the Los Angeles Rams early in September, just about 2 months ago. And he will be the designated starter against the Cleveland Browns this week. And the way Cleveland's been playing, heck, Brandon Allen could just step out there and have a heck of a game, and all of a sudden Denver wins against the Cleveland Browns, and who knows, maybe Brandon Allen. We've seen it time and time again this NFL season. Backup quarterbacks are lifesavers. You have to have somebody that's available and capable of stepping into any situation and being able to take over on your offense the same way you'd run it regardless of who's at quarterback. And maybe you have some different packages or sets for one quarterback versus another, but in general, each team is playing their offense still the way they want to play it regardless of who is out there, and we've seen time and time again, you have to be able to have a backup quarterback that is willing and able to step out there and step up and be the guy when you need him to be, and Brandon Allen could do that. Not that Joe Flacco is having an awful year, but he's not having a good year either, and this Denver team has struggled. If it wasn't for their defense, they might not have the few wins that they do have right now. So with Brandon Allen stepping out there again, could be kind of this change in fortune, this shift in momentum, and we could see maybe Denver get on a little bit of a hot streak behind Brandon Allen for the next 4 to 6 weeks at least, if that's how long Joe Flacco was out. But we'll see how it goes. Hopefully Joe Flacco has nothing serious with his neck, and he can come back and play and at least continue his career in the NFL. Because he is a Super Bowl MVP, even though he struggled and hasn't played as well since that season that he led the Ravens to the Super Bowl. But still, he's a talented guy, and hopefully with a neck injury, everything is A-OK, and he can get back to the team and be out there with the Broncos. And then some other news out of the AFC West. And the Chargers have decided to fire offensive coordinator Ken Wisenhunt. This happened a couple days ago. And Anthony Lynn came out and kind of quote-unquote defended the decision, just saying that the offense is moving in a different direction. And if he was going to do it, why not do it now? We got 8 games left. We got everything still ahead of us to play for. And yeah, you know what? I agree with that. Why not? Your offense has had good games, but I don't think they've gotten over 20 points in the last 3 or 4 games that they've played. So yeah, I would say that a change to your offense is absolutely needed. And why not? Why not let Ken Wisenhunt go? You know what? He had done a great job in his first stint. He left to go be a head coach again, came back, and just didn't seem to have the same kind of gusto with him at that position. And, these are tough decisions that have to be made by a head coach when you see your team struggling. I mean, the Chargers went from, you know, possible AFC contenders last year before they ran into the Patriots to this year not even knowing if they're going to be a playoff team. I thought for sure they were going to be able to have the talent and the players to come in here with the coaching staff and the strategy and the game plan to be competitive in this AFC West division, and they really haven't been so far. So changes have to be made. Sometimes it's player changes like Cincinnati. Sometimes it's personnel changes now like here in with the Chargers. So it's a bummer to see Ken Wisenhunt leave. I do think he was a good guy, and he had some good stuff going there in his first stint, but this offense needs a change. What I'm not super thrilled about, though, is that, I mean, I would like Anthony Lynn to take a little more control of the offense moving forward, at least in the next game or two, while the new play caller kind of settles into his role. Because current Chargers quarterback coach Shane Steichen will be taking over and replacing Wisenhunt. And he's going to have the first game of calling plays against the Green Bay Packers this week. I don't think that's relatively smart. I don't think that's a relatively good way to go. You're going to give a young play caller his first game calling plays. You're going to let that be against Green Bay? Maybe not 100%, huh? Maybe Coach Lynn, you can step in every now and then. You know, maybe don't leave it all the way up to him, because that makes me very nervous. The fact that we have a very old quarterback, 37-year-old Philip Rivers out there, and now a guy is going to be calling his first offensive plays against a team like Green Bay. Not necessarily the ideal opponent for a coach calling his first game or a coordinator calling his first game. Not super thrilled to hear that. I'm hoping Anthony Lynn does step in at some point in the game and maybe kind of help Stikton out. But this makes me very nervous heading into what could be a pivotal game at the start of the second half of the season for the Chargers right now. 3-5, they need to have a good start in the second half of the season. And you have Green Bay on your schedule, and you have a brand new offensive coordinator about to call his first plays in his first game. It seems like a recipe for something that could be bad and get a whole heck of a lot worse very quickly if he isn't kind of kept in check, or maybe just, you know, check. Maybe Anthony Lynn needs to just check in with him every couple drives or before every drive, say, hey, what are we thinking? Here's what we should do. How do you think we should do this? And continually have that conversation throughout the game. I know they usually do that regardless, but I think there should be a little more in-depth conversation maybe throughout this week and into the game between Anthony Lynn and Coach Stikton. Otherwise, this could get a whole lot uglier, a whole lot quicker for the Chargers. And the way their season's going, the way their division's going, the way this conference is going right now in the AFC, really can't have that poor of a start to the second half of the season. So this makes me a little, not so much the firing of Ken Whisenhunt, but just the fact that Stikton's going to be his first game against Green Bay. That makes me very, very nervous. But let's start talking now about the game happening tonight, Thursday Night Football, San Francisco at Arizona. It's going to be a whole lot of fun. If you're looking for a fun place to watch the game, of course, myself and my pal Tony here at the station here at Lotus, we're going to be at Tamarack Junction inside Sully Sports Bar off South Virginia Street. We'll be there from kickoff till the end of the third quarter. We'll be doing giveaways and raffle prizes every time somebody scores. We usually have a really cool halftime prize, so you come on down, see if you can win that. And it's usually a very fun atmosphere down there. They got great food, great drinks, so come on down there and enjoy a fun game. Hopefully it will be a fun game. I think it will. Niners are favored by 10 points. Two young quarterbacks with Murray and Garoppolo, where Garoppolo has looked very, very consistent and stable this year, and Kyler Murray seems though just getting better and better each game, whether it's kind of bigger jumps or smaller jumps. He seems to be understanding the game more, understanding what it takes to play this game more every time he steps out there. So I think 10-point favorite for San Francisco is very, very realistic. I think it's a good number. I think if the Niners are going to win a competitive game against Arizona, I don't think it's going to come down to one possession. I think it'll be something like a 10 or a 14-point game for San Francisco, but I think Arizona is going to push them. I think they're going to pressure this team and make them have to make big plays and tough decisions throughout this game, because divisional games always bring something different and something new to them. And I feel like Arizona knows and San Francisco knows kind of where these two quarterbacks are in their young careers. The fact that San Francisco's defense has been downright diabolical this year, regardless of who they've been playing. I mean, they're coming off a 51-13 victory over Carolina last week. It was an insane game to watch, the way that team on offense and defense just mauled the Carolina Panthers. And it could turn to that again tonight with Arizona as well. This defense could just pick this young quarterback apart and this young offense apart. I don't think that's exactly how it's going to go, but I'd actually be more surprised if Kyler Murray didn't turn the ball over, or if this Cardinals team didn't turn the ball over against San Francisco. The Cardinals haven't committed a turnover for the last four games. And you can see why that's worked. They're 3-1 their last four, beating Cincinnati, Atlanta, and the New York Giants, and then coming up short against New Orleans. But three of those four games were on the road, and all four, they didn't turn the ball over. So this team is very comfortable with moving the ball down, operating in their offense, and comfortable with how they can do it and how they know they can do it. And, I wouldn't be surprised if this San Francisco 49ers defense is able to cause Kyler Murray some trouble and pick the ball off. It's going to be interesting to see how the Cardinals' run game is operating tonight, with the fact that they're going to be short Chase Edmonds and David Johnson. However, they do have Kenyon Drake coming in, and I think they signed Alfred Morris as well, so you can run with those two running backs and see what they can give you. But it's going to be interesting to see how Arizona can mesh that run and pass game, because when you have a rookie quarterback back there, or even a young quarterback back there, you need a run game. And so for Arizona to be down their two big stars, because Chase Edmonds had been erupting onto the scene the last couple games. It was so tough to see him go down with an injury. And, of course, David Johnson being out in the season, the last couple seasons he's had, it was tough to see him go out too. But I think Kenyon Drake and Alfred Morris can give Arizona a good run game, or at least enough of a run game to let Kyler Murray have his passing game the way it's been. And if you're San Francisco, Breed of the Cheetah is back. I mean, he's reported to dress for the game tonight and be on the sideline ready to go. He is still listed as questionable as of yesterday, but again, sounds like he's going to get to go tonight. He'll dress. He'll be out there for San Francisco. This game is in Arizona, so I think that'll help the Cardinals out a little bit, but it doesn't seem as though road or home is bothering San Francisco at all. Obviously, this team 5-0 in their last five games. They're undefeated this season. But if you look at their last five games, two of them on the road against the Rams and Washington, 20-7, 9-0 wins. So it doesn't seem as though being on the road has bothered this team at all as of late or this season. So I think it's going to be a good showing from both teams. I think it's going to be a fun, entertaining game. We haven't gotten a lot of entertaining primetime games this year. There's been a couple here and a couple there. But hopefully we get an exciting Thursday night game between San Francisco and Arizona. I want to pick the Cardinals, because they're at home. I like Kyler Murray. I like the way they've been playing. But there's no way I'm going to go against the 49ers this year. Until they lose, until they show me these guys are vulnerable, I just don't see it. So I think San Francisco wins at on the road tonight. I think they pick up their eighth victory of the year, go to 8-0. And I could see them winning by 10, maybe even 14 points over the Cardinals. Wouldn't be surprised, though, if they just gapped them by 21 or 28. But I feel like it's going to be a close, exciting game tonight, and it's going to be entertaining. So be sure to tune in. And again, come on down to Sully's off of inside Tamarack Junction off South Virginia Street if you want to hang out for the first three quarters of the game, or if you want to hang out for the entire game, because the great staff there at Sully's continues to do their own giveaways during the fourth quarter as well. So just not – it's a win-win situation down there if you want to come on down and hang out for Thursday Night Football, which I urge you to do. All right, after the break, former Cardinals head coach, now current Tampa Bay Buccaneers head coach Bruce Arians made some comments about officials being held accountable after their tough game against Tennessee this past week. So I'll give you my two Spenceworth on his thoughts and comments after the break here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
So we've seen this happen a couple times now this season where a fumble will occur or the ball will come loose, and then as everyone's kind of scrambling for it, referees are blowing the whistle. It's blown dead. We saw it happen a handful of times last year as well in some crucial moments. And it happened again this past week in the NFL. The Titans and the Buccaneers were playing a very highly contested game. Tennessee was going for a field goal. They decided to fake it. The holder got lit up, dropped the ball. Tampa Bay picked it up and ran in for a touchdown, except they didn't, because one of the refs blew the whistle thinking that the Tennessee player was down, essentially taking a touchdown off the board for Tampa Bay. And that's infuriating and frustrating, as you can imagine, for players and coaches involved in the Tampa Bay squad. In fact, head coach Bruce Arians had this quote after the game when he said, quote, "Everybody except one guy saw the ball out, blew a quick whistle. My biggest thing is referees aren't held accountable. Coaches get fired, general managers get fired, players get cut. Referees aren't accountable. And it's a shame. It's been there 40 years, and now we've got a new agreement, and it'll be that way for 40 more years," unquote. And I totally understand that. There is no real way to punish refs. We saw it after the NFC Championship game last year. Definitely should have been a penalty for that ref not seeing two fouls. Not just pass interference, but helmet-to-helmet contact. And then we keep hearing this talk from the officiating office in the NFL where they say, yeah, we're trying to tell people and tell our referees to let the play happen because we can take points off the board and not put points back on the board. Yet, refs just aren't getting that because I think they're in a tough position. You have to watch out for player safety, correct? That's been a big point of the NFL, player safety, head-to-head hits, targeting, all that stuff. So in a sense, You want the refs to blow the whistle quick in that situation if you think a guy's down, because then if he was down and Buccaneers players are running down the field with the ball, we could have a fight break out or someone takes a cheap hit that doesn't need to be hit, doesn't need to be taken. So I get that point, but you do also have to let the play out. If there's any doubt in your mind that, and maybe there wasn't, maybe that ref thought 100% no doubt that guy is down, that ball is not a fumble. And if that's the case, that's just a tough break. But I do think the referees are in a bit of a tough position right now where you're trying to protect guys, but they're also telling you to let the play go on so you can take points off the board. So I do think there needs to be some kind of referee punishment put in. Maybe you add like a relegation promotion type thing. If a ref isn't doing well and he makes constant mistakes, relegate him back down to college or some kind of amateur league, semi-professional league, and then promote a ref from a semi-professional league or from the college ranks that's doing extremely well calling plays, and or not calling plays, but calling penalties and officiating. Because there does have to be something to be held accountable for, whether it's a fine or a suspension or whatever it is. Or if they do decide to get fired, I agree with Bruce Arians. You do have to figure out a way to try and hold referees accountable. Otherwise, this stuff is going to keep happening. The officiating office can tell these guys all they want about letting the play on. But unless there is some kind of repercussion that they can face, it's all just going in one ear and out the other. All right, that's our show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll be on earlier tomorrow. Remember, it's Friday, so we're on the air at 1 p.m. Mr. Sean Cloud will be here in studio, I believe. We'll talk football. We'll talk Formula One. We'll have some segments from the coaches' show from last night in case you missed that. All coming up on a fun Friday show tomorrow. So tune in at 1. Talk to you then. Peace.